welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of your favorite Falcons fan site, The Falcoholic. I am DW, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the Joom, Pether of Dogs, first of her name, the Daenerys Targaryen, the Falcons Twitter, she who will not be bossed, Gina Mad Online Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, David. How are you?
I am freaking fantastic. I've got a nice old-fashioned that's almost gone, so that's a bit of sadness for me.
I need to actually take a drink of my hard seltzer. I have a horrible sinus infection, and I'm going to try to kill these germs with 5% ABV. That's my plan. It's sound medical advice, folks. You heard it here first.
Indeed. Joining us today for quite possibly the first time in, I think, 2-3 decades, is none other than the man himself, the bald beauty, he who never sleeps, the one, the only, the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate. Dave, how are you doing?
Good.
You,
Dave, are you sad that your intro isn't as good as mine?
I really do.
No, I'm not that sad about it. I just, you know, how does one respond to it, to an introduction like that?
I forgot what I said. So I can't even posit an opinion on it anymore. Moving on. So, Dave, thanks for being back on the podcast. We are, I guess, officially a little over a month away from the 2018 NFL Draft. We have been, roughly 2 weeks into NFL free agency. And Dave, I know, we'll start with you on this because clearly fans have been extremely moderate and very reserved in their opinions about what the Falcons have done in free agency. So through roughly 2 weeks of free agency and understanding that Falcons fans are very reasonable and very down to earth and without harsh opinions or overreactions, what are your feelings on what the Falcons have done in free agency so far?
Judging by the very moderate, very reasonable reactions of the fan base, which come from a place of love, and an understanding that you have to let the off season unfold. So what I've heard from Falcons fans who, again, have reacted very reasonably, everything is terrible and we might as well quit and let's bring back the Thrashers, because they're the only respectable Atlanta sports team. So screw the Falcons, blah, blah, blah.
Dave, I do have a question. Are the Falcons going to trade for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, God. It's hard to probably imagine, how I react to things normally. Normally, I just kind of laugh because a lot of them are funny, and I get why people are interested. But the Beckham one made me cringe because I knew it was coming, and sure enough,
mm-hmm.
it came. Falcons free agency has not been that impressive. Honestly, they got a small handful of quality players like they always do, but none of them were very exciting. We watched a lot of big splashy signings elsewhere. And, at this point I'm ready to see what they do in the draft to see how this all comes together, because right now, obviously they have a couple of holes that they need to fill. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle being the big one. And until I see what they do there, I can't really judge how I should be feeling about the free agent class. But, I want to love it so much just because of the way everyone's reacted to it. Because, God, it's man, I'll tell you.
Well, Gina, I know you have also seen some of the reactions online, but as Dave mentioned, they can still do a lot in the draft. And I've been of the opinion that the Falcons have a roster that doesn't need complete revamping. by and large, they had starters in almost every position. So what is your take on free agency, and especially in light of the idea that, you know, this is a team that's been to the playoffs 2 years in a row, a Super Bowl 2 years ago, a play away from the NFC Championship game the following year. What is your opinion on what they've done in free agency?
Yeah, I think that this is a team that has most of its talent intact from the past 2 years, where they have been a Super Bowl team and then a playoff team, respectively. I think that this is a team that is also building not just for this year. And I think that that's an important distinction to make. I think that it, you know, there's a little bit of recency bias for Falcons fans because last year, Dontari Poe was one of the bigger name free agents out there. The Falcons landed him, but they landed him on a pretty team friendly deal. You know, the 1 year deal, that's why he's not here anymore. Alex Mack was obviously a splashy signing, but he filled a huge need. It was still a utility signing and a long-term, you know, a long-term solution at a very important position. So this year, I don't really think that there were any players who would have fit in terms of need and cost that would work with the Falcons' long-term plans, because I think that their emphasis on the draft and the fact that they do have starters pretty much intact across the board right now, I think that it just kind of relieves them of some of that need, and I think that it lets them really build for the future through the draft. So it's not something that it even crossed my mind to be upset about.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in the past that the Falcons will be active in the second and third waves of free agency. Obviously, that being, you know, after camps have begun and, you know, after preseason has begun. And generally that's a time where you can find some, you know, veteran options. And, you know, I've reminded a few people that we picked up Andy Levitre, I want to say after the fourth preseason game several years ago.
Fourth preseason game. That was it. It was after the fourth preseason game. And yeah, they traded for him.
Yep. Sixth round pick.
The other thing that the same year, they brought in Taylor Gabriel after he was dumped by the Browns.
By the way, did we give up a sixth round pick for Andy Levitre and then give up a fifth round pick for Ty Cimbrello?
Well, the Thomas moves in mysterious ways.
I'm not a math doctor, but that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
No, I think that it, I think it's fair to raise the question, Dave. That's a very fair question, especially since the Broncos bloggers at SB Nation, my friends over at Mile High Report, are still giving me shit about it all these months later. Like when the team was going to move Simeon, they were like, hey, you know, you could land another really terrible Bronco, Gina. And I'm like, thank you. Like, what do I do with Trevor Simeon? Please get out of my face. But yeah.
Touchdown, though.
So I want to go through some of the more recent free agent signings, get your thoughts and opinions on some of these names. Let's start with the Logan Paulson signing, tight end coming from the 49ers. He's built sort of in the mold of a traditional inline blocking tight end who can occasionally catch the ball if everything has gone completely sideways. Dave, what are your thoughts on the Falcons essentially replacing Toilolo with Logan Paulson?
Well, you know, I think the Falcons really made an important move when they went with a tight end who is shorter and has longer hair. anytime you can do that, you've got to make that upgrade. So, you know, to me, Paulson's probably a better blocker than Toilolo, so I understand why they wanted to add him for that reason. This team seems to be, judging by Dan Quinn's comments, lining up to run the ball a lot more. Maybe not the worst thing in the world considering the talent of their backs, but you know, he's just, to me, he's a fairly one-dimensional guy, which Toilolo kind of was too. And if he upgrades the blocking, great. I am hopeful that they're either going to add a prospect or they like what they saw last year from Eric Sauber and are going to give him a shot at a larger role, because this team could really use two tight ends who can do more than one thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I do have to say, now we know that Dave is never on the Falcoholic podcast because we actually devoted a title of an episode to the fact that his name is Saubert. He's Midwestern. He is not from France.
No, I know. But you
because
know what?
I got corrected by his agent. I got his agent heard me on the radio, and I got corrected by his agent on Twitter. That's
awesome. Hey, Dave.
I got well actually'd.
Well, whether he thinks his name is French or not, I think it is. So,
and I just have to say that Eric Saubert has this for you.
You suck.
So, moving on to the next free agent. This one has
Real
been
quick,
very.
Can I say one more thing about Paulson? Can I say
one
absolutely thing about Paulson?
Can.
You know,
yes,
the Falcons are still running the a blocking scheme that's similar to what Shanahan is running in San Francisco. And of course, coming from San Francisco, he has some experience. So that's going to make his learning curve a little bit shorter. So I think that that's a benefit. My dog is trying to eat my microphone. This is very problematic. Okay, I'm done. I'm done about Paulson. That's all I had to say.
It's a very good point. And I think it is an important point. He'll be able to contribute at a higher level immediately versus, you know, some other random tight end that is not named Jimmy Graham. Anyhow, second free agent I want to bring up, and this one's interesting because we've heard many very, how should I say this, off-base opinions on the capabilities of this player. Even though he is, quote-unquote, a Pro Bowler, it is important to note he is a Pro Bowler as a special teams player, not as his listed position. And that is Justin Bethel, a veteran cornerback. I believe he last played with the Arizona Cardinals. Gina, your thoughts on the Falcons picking up this veteran corner and adding him to the mix?
I like the signing. He's a great special teamer. I think that he, you know, he could be really valuable as a gunner. I think that's really an underrated element. And yeah, I mean, it's a cheap signing. It's a very low risk signing, and I'm with it. I like it.
Dave, I know you've had to talk to a few people about Justin Bethel's potential role on the team. Where do you see him fitting in 2018?
I don't think, as the person who called me the village idiot and the town drunk suggested.
Oh wait, you mean my attorney?
Yes, your personal attorney at law suggested that he's as good as Patrick Peterson. So.
Oh
well,
wow.
I would just agree to disagree. I would say though that guy should maybe call the White House. I think that there's an opening for an attorney, and I think he fits the bill.
there may have been some hyperbole involved there, but I did appreciate the effort and the insults. But I like Bethel for the exact same reason, and I think, you know, I have an article dropping tomorrow, which will be today, for people listening to this podcast, talking about field position. And, you know, we all talked about how the Falcons had an awful starting field position in 2017, but they were also one of the 10 worst teams in terms of field position allowed to other teams starting field position.
Yep.
So I think somebody like Bethel, who really is a genuinely great special teamer, can fly down the field, make contact, if not a tackle, to try to slow things down, is a valuable addition. And it kind of tells you that the Falcons are thinking holistically about how to solve their issues. They're not just thinking, we got to get Sark right, we got to improve this offense. But, you know, maybe if we started 10 yards further downfield, that would make a difference in our ability to score touchdowns. So I appreciate the effort there. And you know, it's only going to make things easier on the defense if they improve the special teams coverage units.
Yeah, and it's not a glamorous signing, and I think that, again, is, you know, people are seeing these big names. You see teams like the Rams, who apparently are going to sign Ndamukong Suh, you know, who are picking up multiple big-name splashy players. And, of course, it brings us to, inevitably, what becomes the talking point in the midst of all of this, and that is the looming Matt Ryan contract. Because obviously this is a team that has a franchise quarterback. It's a team that is about to pay their franchise quarterback a tremendous amount of money. And if you do the math, 6 years at $30 million a year is actually $180 million for a total contract value, even though some people aren't capable of doing that math. So with that
some
said...
Some people who will remain unnamed.
Who will remain unnamed, yes.
I was not good at math in high school, and I'll beg you to not make fun of it.
I'm half Asian. I cannot promise that. So
the Joom is also not good at math, but I do know that they will be paying Matt Ryan about or upwards of $30 million a year. I mean, there's just no question. That's the nature of quarterback contracts. That's the way that it works.
Yep. And I think it's fair to mention that, you know, the point that Ryan got his last contract extension, he was not an MVP at that point. He had not taken the team to a Super Bowl. And yet he still got a pretty rich extension. And on top of that, he has now accomplished both of those things, as well as having one of the top 10 all-time NFL seasons for a quarterback in NFL history. And the additional factor of the fact that the NFL salary cap has raised dramatically in the 5 years that Ryan has played under his original contract. So it would stand to reason they're going to receive more money. But with that said, the criticism has been that because, and take your pick, I've seen numerous arguments, Dave, I know you've seen them ad nauseum. He hasn't won a Super Bowl, so he doesn't deserve that money. By giving him this contract, we can't afford to pay other players. So thinking about some of these arguments and the potential, again, of paying Matt Ryan an average of $30 million per year, even though the guaranteed money is going to be completely different. Do you think these arguments have merit, or do you think that when it comes to the quarterback position, you just simply have to pay these guys?
I think, you know, it's actually a fair question. Let me put it that way. When people say these things, when they grumble about them, I understand. You look at the way the Rams and the Eagles are loading up right now because they have you know, quarterbacks on rookie contracts that are very affordable. I understand the temptation. But I also do think you have to have a good, at least quarterback, if not a great one, even on their rookie contract to really, you know, to have a chance of sustainable success. You know, the Eagles, if they were trotting out Nick Foles again this year for a full season, you know, he kind of dragged them across the finish line before he found some Joe Flacco magic in the postseason. You know, that's not a guaranteed thing. And to me, yes, if you could, as great as Ryan has been for this franchise, if you could swap him out and guarantee me that, say, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield was going to be 75, 80% of the quarterback that he was, of course, the money you save would be worth it, and you could probably win a Super Bowl with that player. The problem is you can't guarantee that. And if you screw it up and you get rid of a franchise icon, the best quarterback you've ever had, and replace him with a guy that is not good enough to drag your good roster into the postseason, let alone a Super Bowl, then everybody's just going to be angry all over again. And now you don't have that great quarterback who's gotten you so close so many times. I think people really don't understand how difficult it is to get there, especially in today's NFL. And really that Ryan has done everything he possibly can to get them there. You know, he wasn't who let us down in the Super Bowl when you come right down to it. So in my mind, you got to pay him because there may not be a replacement that's going to do the job for you.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it any better. Gina, anything you want to add on to what Dave has said about Ryan getting paid?
Well, you know, aside from just the fact that it is the nature of the market and the reason the salary cap increases so dramatically is because they have to accommodate these ludicrous quarterback salaries. Is it ridiculous? Yes, it's ridiculous. Is everything about NFL salaries ridiculous? Probably. When you put it in the context of, you know, the money that these players generate for the NFL and for their individual teams, it's really less ridiculous. And I would just say this. I want everybody to think back to 2007. I'm sorry to do this to you. I'm sorry to do this to you because it was a horrible time.
I quit.
But you remember Vic went to prison. Michael Vick went to prison. And then we had to watch Joey Harrington, Chris Redman, who had been selling insurance before they pulled him back onto a football field. And Byron freaking Leftwich.
Okay? Byron Leftwich, my God.
Matt Ryan, if you let Matt Ryan walk in free agency, you run the risk of having some kind of horrific quarterback situation like that again. I'm sorry. I lived through it once. I don't want to do it again. No, thank you. And at least that time, it wasn't the Falcons' fault. It was because Vic was in prison. Yeah. If the Falcons let Matt Ryan walk and we have to suffer through some bullshit like that, it's their fault. And then I'm going to be really mad. So they're going to pay him and it's going to be fine. But everybody just needs to accept that they're going to pay him. It's just the nature of the business.
And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, and this is not actually to be derogatory. A lot of people have become fans of the Falcons over the last decade. It's understandable. Mm-hmm. You're either young or, you know, the team got good and you got interested, and either one is fine. But if all you've ever really known is Matt Ryan, I think it's very easy to take him for granted. If you grew up and you were a fan in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when I was a fan and we had Chris Miller and, mm-hmm. Gosh, Bobby Hebert for a while. I don't know. You know,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was brutal. You don't want to do that again. We're a little bit, obviously we don't have the Super Bowl, so we're not as spoiled as we'd like to be, but we've been spoiled by the quarterback play to the point that we think a replacement is an easy thing. And sure, we can get somebody like Matt Ryan again. And the reality is you can't. It's just not going to happen.
Just bench that bum and start Schaub.
Schaub!
Schaub! You know, I think
all way, I will remind you that we also had to watch Matt Schaub play a whole bunch when Vic was here because you couldn't stay healthy.
True.
You know, Ryan's been very durable. That's another issue in his favor. The best ability is durability. Availability. Yeah. It's actually availability, but that's because of durability. I have a sinus infection. Don't boss
ability.
Me.
Oh, Gina. Gina.
You suck ass, Rick. You really do.
So
there is no Rick on this podcast.
There needs to be a Rick, damn it. We need a Rick. Anyhow, my two cents on the whole Matt Ryan deal is I think all you have to do is, you know, Dave, to the point you made about how hard it is to find a good quarterback, go through the last 10 NFL drafts, look at all the quarterbacks that have been taken in the first round, and look at how many are still in the league. And of those that are still in the league, look at how many are playing at a high level, who have made multiple Pro Bowls. And I think once you look at that and you look at 10 years, 10 consecutive years, and you see how few quarterbacks actually make it in this league over an entire decade, it makes you realize why you have to hang on to a franchise quarterback. Ryan is not perfect. Ryan is prone to mistakes that drive us all crazy. Ryan is not Tom Brady. Ryan is not Aaron Rodgers. But at the same time, those guys are exceptionally hard to find. They're called generational players for a reason. They don't come out every year. They don't come out every 3 years. These guys are, you know, they play into their late 30s and 40s because it's impossible to replace them. They become Hall of Famers for a reason. And I've also seen people asking, well, you know, Tom Brady took a home team discount to stay with the Patriots. And that is a half truth at best. And I want to address this on the podcast because this one drives me more nuts than anything. Number one, Tom Brady doesn't make the most money of the in his own home. His wife actually makes more money per year than he does.
By far, it's not even close. It's like, she makes an unfathomable amount of money. They live in a house that has a moat. Okay, all of your arguments are null and void.
The moat,
exactly.
And strawberries the end. Out of his home.
And number two, he really didn't take. He got all of his money up front. He got a ton of guaranteed money up front. So anyone who says that he took like this massive discounted contract does not know what they're talking about. In the NFL, there are total contract values, which is a BS number, and then there is guaranteed money. The only thing that matters is guaranteed money. That is the only thing that matters.
Once a team pays out that guaranteed money, they can doesn't matter how many years the player has left on his deal, they can cut him loose with no ramifications. Even and typically contract, like if you look at Spotrac or if you look at Over the Cap, they always note this, like they'll note where the team has an out.
Yep.
And usually it's, you know, depending on the age of the player, it's going to be 2 to 3 years in. But there's always an out for the team where all of that guaranteed money is paid out, or else there's such a small amount of it left relative to the cap space the team has that they can easily walk away from that player without any second thoughts. And so, yeah, I mean, as somebody was asking about this in reference to Ryan's contract, and they're like, well, you know, how that's the other argument against it is, oh, it's going to kill the Falcons. The Falcons don't have the cap space to sign him that. Yes, they do. The cap is a finite number. Like it's a firm, real number, but contract numbers are really malleable and they can structure things in different ways so that the bigger cap hits are later on and they can still stack that guaranteed money up front in the form of different bonuses that don't count against the cap. And it's all ridiculous. Like the contracts are very theoretical as far as how teams have the flexibility to structure them. And so it would actually be good for the Falcons to go ahead and restructure or to extend Ryan sooner rather than later so that they have some more space to play with.
Yep. And I think that will it'll happen before long. And Ryan's going to get paid. And here's some quick numbers for fans to digest for those who are interested in it. The Falcons have, depending on your source, and I'm looking at overthecap.com right now, Falcons have roughly $5 million in cap space in 2018. They'll get another $4 million or so after June 1st when Levine Toilolo, when that cut goes through because he was a post-June 1st cut. Next year, they will have almost $78 million in cap space estimated. Now, that obviously doesn't have a Matt Ryan contract, but even if you figure a cap hit of $25 million, that still leaves them with $50 million in space next year. And then in excess of $100 million the next several years. So, again, the Falcons have room in the contracts to structure this in such a way that they can pay Ryan, and they can also pay guys like Jake Matthews, who's probably going to be the next young guy to get paid. Grady Jarrett, I think, is going to be the guy next to Jake Matthews that's going to get a long-term contract. And then you have to start thinking about guys like Vic Beasley, Deion Jones, Keanu Neal. And the list goes on. And this is a good problem to have. I mean, Dave, you pointed back to, you know, some of the early years of being a Falcons fan. When I remember Bobby Hebert, when his arm was basically falling off on the field, he could barely throw the ball. We are looking at a roster now where the Falcons may legitimately have to make tough decisions because they have drafted so many talented players. So what are your thoughts on the fact that, you know, the Falcons are sort of in an enviable position from a talent standpoint?
It's kind of amazing. You think back to the Mike Smith Falcons, and one of the things that I'll say for poor Smitty, you know, who is very easy to rag on these days, you look at the talent that team was shedding, and it was like a leper, like losing limbs. It was horrifying. It's like, oh my God. You
quite a visual.
Beerman, and you're still walking. That's terrible. You know, and that's really, they did not have any talent. They really got by being a really disciplined, well-coached team, and playing way above their heads for the most part. And this team
and grit and grit, Dave, and
so much scrappiness. And you know, they were lunch pail guys, but you know, these Falcons are just so talented, almost across the board. It's kind of amazing, and I think that's what people are missing here is when they're saying, "Well, they're not making major additions to the team." Of course not. This is probably the most talented Falcons team we've seen since the '98 squad. You know, and probably more talented than that. This is a really good team, and I think that this is a position that we want to be in, where they have to decide, you know, who of these great players they're going to keep with the cap space they have. And they're very lucky to be in that position. But it does mean that, you know, things will get tight at times and they're going to have to let good players go. And they're certainly not going to be out here making the big signings. And, you know, it's useful to remember that a year from now, that'll be the Vikings with Kirk Cousins. You know, 2 or 3 years from now, that'll be Carson Wentz and the Eagles and Jared Goff and the Rams. It's really just where you are in your team building approach. And the Falcons, by drafting well, which they'll hopefully do again this year, have put themselves in a position to be very good for a long time. And we really should not take that for granted.
Yeah. Gina, you know, the fact that we have this conversation and we don't have a ton of cap space is an indication that the past few years have gone well. Do you think fans are overreacting to the fact that the Falcons aren't being big players this year? Or do you think that there are some legitimate concerns about the holes on the roster?
No, I mean, I think that it's easy to – our last football memory from this past season is the Falcons not being able to get it done in the red zone, and it's frustrating. And I think that, you know, seeing the season end on that note, and it was a season that was really up and down and that was frustrating in a lot of ways anyway, even though they made it to playoffs, even though they managed to beat the Rams, you know, it was a frustrating season in a lot of ways. So I think that frustration kind of carries into this offseason. I think that it makes it a little bit harder to be optimistic because you're not seeing any changes. You're seeing guys like, you know, the changes that you are seeing are guys like Claiborne and Poe leaving, Gabriel leaving, you know. I think that I get the frustration element of it. I would just say, typically, the big winners in free agency aren't the big winners in the regular season. The splashy moves just don't always pan out. And honestly, more often than not, they don't pan out. Remember a few years ago when the Eagles built a dream team and then they were terrible. Yep. Now, last year, the Eagles actually had a really nice balance of, you know, seeing the talent they drafted kind of reach their potential. And then also they made some really smart moves in free agency, I thought, and that helped them get to a Super Bowl despite losing their starting quarterback late in the season. So, you know, it can't, those big moves in free agency can pay off. They just don't always. There are so many variables there as far as chemistry and how they fit with your team and your scheme and so many unknowns. And so I really don't think that it's a big deal. You know, again, the Falcons are pretty set with starters across the board. They're returning, you know, the bulk of the talent that they had the past couple of years. You know, they've got all of that intact. I think that it's really fine.
Yeah. And I want to add this last piece because I think it gets forgotten in the midst of free agency. When you do see some good players out there and available, for the most part, the best players are kept by the teams that they're on. You know, when we got Alex Mack a couple of years ago, that was considered a bit of a coup because usually one of the best centers in the league doesn't get away from the team that drafted him or originally signed him.
Well, but he did because they let him have an opt-out clause in his contract, and it's the Browns, so he opted the hell out.
It's rare. I mean, unless you're the Browns, I think we should put that caveat on everything. Unless it's the Browns. But, you know, for the most part, good players stay with their teams. And that's not to say that you can't find good free agents, but to your point, in many cases, you have to find a free agent that fits in with what you're trying to accomplish. Because by and large, just loading up with pure talent is not necessarily a fix in and of itself. I mean, case in point, because he is apparently about to sign or has signed with the Rams, Ndamukong Suh is arguably one of the best defensive tackles in the league, you know, behind Aaron Donald, who he's now going to be joining in LA. But when he was signed to that mega contract in Miami, it didn't make a significant difference. You know, they were a fringe playoff team. They were sort of a perennial 8-8, 7-9 team. I think they were just on the outskirts of making the playoffs in the AFC, a weak AFC. But this big splash signing did not bring it home. And
it didn't.
Despite the talent.
Well, and I've got another. This is a teachable moment, Falcons fans. As a mom, I look out for these teachable moments. I'm going to take advantage of this teachable moment. Do y'all remember when we wanted Jairus Byrd?
Oh, my word.
We wanted him so badly. We needed a safety. It was so perfect. He was going to be fantastic. And the Saints signed him. And it was like, Armageddon. It was the worst thing that could have possibly happened. There was wailing and there was gnashing of teeth and there was rending of garments and there was weeping in the streets and everybody, it was a disaster for New Orleans. It went so badly. It was horrible.
It really did.
He got hurt. He got hurt immediately. And then when he did play, he was a shadow of the player that he used to be. And so think about that, folks. Think about that. And just remember how Atlanta dodged a bullet there. And you don't know how any of this is going to pan out. There are so many factors that go into a player's success. And I just don't think that it's all that troublesome that the Falcons didn't make any big moves.
Yeah. All right, Dave, any last thoughts on what the Falcons have done to free agency before we move on to our final topic?
Yeah, I would just say that the one signing we didn't talk about because it happened a while ago, Brandon Fusco, I'm going to pronounce everybody's name that way for the rest of the night. Very solid signing. I think that was sort of the day one signing that the Falcons were eager to get out of the way. And it really does make me very interested for the camp battles at guard. I think that's going to be probably the most interesting thing we see all summer because there are a ton of guys at that position right now, and I really don't know who's not going to make the roster. So I'm looking forward to that.
It shores up a position of need. And again, this is a guy who's coming out of San Francisco, so he's familiar with Shanahan's scheme that shortens that learning curve, and it does make those camp battles more interesting.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, last topic to close out the podcast was a meeting or some sort of conference that Dan Quinn was in. I think it was today.
Owners meetings.
Owners meetings.
Week. Yeah, The owners are meeting. Yep, in Orlando.
Yep.
That's why D-Led's posting on Instagram pictures of himself by the pool and saying we can't see a Speedo. Classic D-Led.
Oh, God. That is so amazing, actually. That is, oh, God bless him. He is a national treasure. Dan Quinn had some interesting things that he said. And I will say, one of the things I appreciate about Coach Quinn is the fact that he tends to be very forthright. He's not as elusive with answering questions as maybe Smitty was. Obviously, Quinn is prone to the coach speak, as many of them are. But he had a few things that he said that were pretty interesting, including some thoughts on the offense, where he said they will get what was the word he used? Retooling, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Dave, I'll start with you on this one. What does retooling the offense mean in your mind when you hear that from Dan Quinn?
I think it means Steve Sarkisian is going to be dumped in a river somewhere.
You heard it here first, folks.
Folks, he's going to be in the river somewhere. I think, honestly, that is a bit of coach speak that's going to prove to be pretty misleading, because I think the retooling that they're talking about is not going to be very robust in terms of personnel. I think even in terms of what they're doing with personnel packages and so forth, I don't think it's going to be significantly different than a year ago. I think it's really just about getting these guys in a position to succeed. And, you know, to me, you know, when you're talking openly about having Marvin Hall or Reggie Davis be your number three wide receiver, you know, I like those guys. I think they have some real upside, but that is not a retooled offense. A retooled offense is you're throwing some guys out and starting over again. But I think there's going to be a lot of continuity here. I think that Quinn really is referring to just kind of doing things better. I don't know why retool is the word he would use for that, but unless there's a big surprise in the offing, I think that's really all we're talking about here. I think that, you know, they're going to position Steve Sarkisian to you know, maybe learn a few things from some veteran coaches like Greg Knapp, which I never thought I would see him back with the Falcons. But, you know, hopefully that works out this time. But I think that's really all it is. It might be a little bit of a change in overall philosophy, but it's not be extremely noticeable, I think, on the field in terms of, you know, the look and feel. But hopefully we'll see better results.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully. Gina, do you think that the Falcons will continue to deploy a quote-unquote Shanahan offense, or do you think that we're going to see something that's going to morph more towards maybe some of the things that Sarkisian wants to do instead? Do you think this is going to start to morph the offense? Do you think that's what Dan Quinn is alluding to?
Yeah, I think that it probably will. And I think that some of the elements like the blocking scheme will stay the same because it's really, I mean, they've got the players who fit that scheme. And so that's going to stay the same. But as far as the plays themselves, I think that we will see some shifts toward more of Sark's philosophy. And I think that that's good. I think that's a positive thing. You know, I think that he would be more comfortable as a play caller, hopefully, if he is working within, you know, a set of plays that he's more comfortable with. So that's my expectation.
Yep. And it's interesting. I think, you know, when we look at what the offense accomplished last year, they were outside of the top 10 in scoring, but there were many elements that were actually pretty good. You know, they were actually pretty good on third downs, even though they didn't have a ton of third down opportunities. They had lots of explosive plays still. So that, you know, another sort of big thing that Dan Quinn has put an emphasis on since he's been here. So it's not like the offense completely fell apart. They just fell apart in some key areas, like obviously red zone, and then the absolutely mind-blowing number of turnovers when you consider the nature of how we came across many of those turnovers with the honest to God, that had to have been the record for how many tipped passes we saw end up in the hands of defenders from, you know, Matt
ridiculous.
Ryan.
I mean, there were just some absolutely ridiculous ones, like Marshawn Lattimore intercepting it off of his own butt. I mean, who does that? It was a ridiculous season.
Yeah. Something else that Dan Quinn said, and Gina, I'll start with you on this one. And I thought this was a very interesting list. When D-Led again asked Coach Quinn about some of the players that he's looking at to improve and to help elevate the team. On the offensive side of the ball, the two names he pointed out, Austin Hooper, which probably doesn't surprise anybody. He's a second-year player going into his third year, so that makes sense. But then he also pointed out Ryan Schrader. On defense, he pointed out Vic Beasley, Keanu Neal, which I thought was very surprising. Brian Poole and Duke Riley. Duke Riley probably being the most obvious choice there. So what are your thoughts on Dan Quinn sort of specifically picking these guys out from both sides of the ball as guys that need to improve and to help elevate the team?
Yeah, I think that that is really interesting. I actually hadn't read the quote. I don't even know what that means, really. I mean, like Duke Riley, like you said, that one's pretty obvious. Hooper, that's pretty obvious. Schrader, I think, is pretty reliable. You know, no matter what, he had a new guy next to him at guard, and that does make his job a whole lot harder. So I think that no matter what, there should be more stability at the right guard position this year. So that should kind of correct itself, because I do think that Schrader's one of the best in the league. Keanu Neal, I don't know, Dan. Maybe Dan Quinn is on some bullshit. Like, I don't even know what he said. I think Keanu Neal's really good. I don't even know. Was Dan hitting the sauce at the coaches' meetings? Like, I don't know what's going on there. I really don't even know what to say about that. Was he just saying names? Was he just, like, saying whatever names came to mind? Like, I don't know. Were those the only players he could think of on the team at that moment? Like, I don't know what he's. I don't know what that means, David.
I think Gary could be better. Who's Gary? Who's Gary, Dylan? Yeah.
Who's Gary? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if there's one thing that I've learned in my nearly 42 years, it's that I don't understand men, and I'm just going to chalk this up to one of those occasions. Like, I don't get it, Dan. I don't get what you're trying to do here. And I don't even know what to say about it. I'm at a loss. I agree with Dan that Duke Riley could improve, and so could Austin Hooper. Everybody else, man, I don't know. That's wild. That's some wild shit right there.
Dave, I'm going to hit you with the last one here before we close out the podcast. Again, one of the infamous D-led questions. By the way, if you guys are interested in these questions and some of the answers, you can find the article at thefalcoholic.com. Feel free to visit the site and read those there. But Dave, one of the things Dan Quinn pointed out was that Julio Jones will be able to participate in the offseason workouts, and that he will, quote unquote, get his timing back with Matt Ryan. And it seems like an admission that perhaps in 2017, Ryan and Julio, their timing was off. And looking back, thinking about it, it does seem like for the first 5-6 games of the season, they just could not connect consistently, especially on the deep ball. Is that something that gives you some hope, or do you feel like that was a statement that doesn't necessarily resonate with what you saw in 2017?
No, I think it's fair. And I think that, you know, one of the things that D-Led does very well, even if it seems like he fixates on things, is that he identifies something that maybe flew under the radar, or the team wouldn't necessarily cop to, and sort of doggedly pursues it. And I think this is one of those cases where there's probably something to that. You know, when you don't have a full off season with someone, when you have limited practice reps, as good as Matt Ryan and Julio are, and as you know, well as they get along and understand one another, it's difficult to keep that rhythm going when you maybe don't have that time.
Sure.
And I think that the season we just saw was weird in a lot of ways. And one of them was that Julio, you know, had some very uncharacteristic plays. And certainly there were times where he wasn't targeted maybe the way we thought he'd be. So I think it's fair to say that maybe that was a factor. And I think, you know, if that persists into this year with a full off season for both of them, that becomes a cause for concern. But maybe that's all it was. Maybe it's as simple as that. And if that's the case, it's certainly good news after this year, that hopefully will not happen again.
Yeah. I took it as a very promising sign personally, because I remember having commented that it looked like the timing was off. Not only, and I remember saying not only with just Julio, but I felt like the timing was also off with Taylor Gabriel at the time. And, you know, I think that both guys were injured coming into camp. So Ryan did not get that time with him that he, you know, he did with some of the other players. And I think this is a sign that Dan Quinn admitted to as much, or at least conceded on some level that, yeah, the timing was not what it needed to be last year. So hopefully we'll see some improvements, because I think in order for this offense to fire on all cylinders, we really do need that connection between Ryan and Julio to be, you know, on point. So, Gina, any last thoughts on that before we wrap up the podcast?
No, I mean, I think that you guys summed it up. I think that that is a positive thing, that they'll have a full off season. And I know, just, and again, you know, we talk about this all the time on this podcast, but like going from Shanahan year one to Shanahan year two, all of the players told me that they had a much higher comfort level with the offense going into that 2016 season after another full off season to acclimate to it. And again, like, I think that Shanahan's just such a preternaturally good play caller. He is so good at anticipating what defenses are going to give him. He's always two steps ahead. I don't think Sark is ever going to be on his level in that context, but I think Sark can be a perfectly serviceable offensive coordinator. And I do think that one more offseason to fully acclimate is going to do wonders for these players, especially with Julio healthy and able to participate the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm feeling good again about the 2018 season. I know some fans are feeling skittish, and that is a normal part of being Falcons fans. Oh, since 1980, the pain has been taking me over. But with that said,
I became a fan in 2005, and it's been nothing but constant sorrow. So yeah.
Yeah, it's welcome to Falcons fandom for those of you who are new to it. The pain Cheers. Will eventually numb you. So Dave, why don't you let our listeners know where they can interact with you and what's going on at the site?
I refuse. No, you can find me on Twitter at TheFalcoholic or at my alter ego Words and Beer, where I mostly just post old person things and coffee gifts, if you're interested in that. And at the site right now, I mean, we're starting to shift gears into the draft and out of free agency. So I think we'll have a lot of good stuff for you on that front very soon. And over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure you will not be fatigued by mock drafts and draft profiles. So check that out.
Yeah, that's fake news, Dave. So
fair.
Hell yeah.
Gina, tell our listeners where they can find you and what you're up to these days.
You can find me on Twitter at Gina Thomas, apparently posting too many pictures of my dog, according to some people. But those people are haters, and I will not be deterred. And then you can also find me again at thefalcoholic.com. I am writing for the site again because Woo-hoo! I got a different job at SB Nation, and now I have the time and emotional energy to write about the Falcons. So I have two interviews with draft prospects coming. These are both guys who'd be late round guys, but and could be undrafted free agents, but both really interesting prospects. Look for those this week. And then oh gosh, I just realized that we totally forgot to do the Falcoholic podcast mailbag.
Oh, we did. Dadgum. You know what? Hold on. Did we get
Let's
questions?
Let's do it real quick.
Yeah,
we've got to do it. I was going to say, I will also be posting our next call for questions for, oh no, the Falcoholic mailbag that we didn't do.
Womp, womp. Damn it.
Well, okay. So, no, we will actually, if you're still listening, congratulations. Now we're going to answer your question. Thank you for asking them.
All right. Hit us with some...
I really am very sick and I'm just doing my best.
All right. I'm looking at the thread now. So thanks. First of all, thanks to those of you who sent in the questions. We will certainly remember to revisit this in the podcast at a later date, earlier on in the podcast. As a matter of fact, we may start the next podcast with the questions. So please keep them coming. We appreciate the participation. Gina, first question, who's the sexiest member of the writing team?
Well, me. But I mean, that's not fair. I'm also the only woman. You know, it's a tough call. I think that everybody's tied.
I think it's
a tough call, but I think that I get first place because of how much Dave's mom likes me. Like, if she had a vote, we know that Dave's mom would pick me.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
So there you go. That's my very professional answer. Professional from every perspective.
Whew, yeah. New definition of professional. Next question. I'm going to take this one. Do you think a $100 million four-year contract with an incentive base to your extension is fair for Ryan? No. He's going to get paid. He's going to get paid max money, and winning MVP and going to the Super Bowl will get that for you. Gina. Next question. Why does drinking before a podcast make it better?
Well, because we're talking about the Falcons, my guy. Like, you got to steel yourself for the shit. that's my main reason.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And when is drinking ever bad?
And I mean, also, we don't drink before the podcast. We drink during, just so you know, or both.
Or both. Like, and after.
Or both. or both, and after, all of the above. Yes.
Yes. Who is your favorite Falcons player of all time? This one's pretty easy for me. This is Jesse Tuggle, the Hammer. He was one of my favorite players growing up. Gina, how about you?
Gosh, I interviewed him, and I think that he was my favorite Falcons former player that I've ever interviewed, along with Mike Ken, who was my very first interview, and I took him out for lunch, like my very first interview ever in any context. And I took him out for lunch at the Outback Steakhouse in Suwannee, and he was so nice. So I really like those guys, but I have to say, like, I don't know, maybe it's because I became a fan in 2005, but like, I loved Michael Turner. I mean, Michael Turner was definitely one of my, it's really hard to narrow it down. I love Matt Ryan, and I think that I probably have to give it to Matt just because I lived through 2007, and that was, you know, very early in my life as a Falcons fan. And then when Ryan came in the next year and just turned it around and they actually got a playoff bid, like, that was such a relief after the 2007 season. So yeah. I think I'm going to have to say Matt.
Yeah. This is an interesting.
I mean, I've been a fan for much less time than everybody else, just since 05.
Doesn't invalidate
it. It's just still a long ass time and a lot of heartbreak. So
yes, and a lot of money and tears. This is a pretty good question. Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell. It doesn't seem realistic to keep them all, and I think the question is, who do we think that they'll keep? So. In that list, I think we keep everyone but Devondre. I think he would be the odd man out. Gina, what do you think?
That was my knee-jerk reaction. So I think that you're right.
Yeah. A few more questions, and we will actually wrap up this podcast. And again, guys, thank you for submitting these. Some of these are really good. I apologize we can't get to them all. Most likely scenario or none of the above. Trading back in the first round to address more depth, double dipping on defensive tackles, not taking a defensive tackle in the first, or are all three likely to happen? So that's actually a very interesting question. What do you think about those draft scenarios, Gina?
I could actually see, I'm trying to remember.
Most likely.
Three. I mean, I could see them trading back. I could see them double dipping on defensive tackles. I think that those would actually be two astute moves.
Mm-hmm.
What was the third thing?
Not taking a defensive tackle in the first.
Oh, no, I think that they'll take a defensive tackle in the first. So I'm going to say those first two are things that I think could happen.
Yep. I'm going to say double dipping.
Especially since they already addressed guard and free agency. Yep. I don't see them.
Yeah, I think they double dip at defensive tackle at this point. Maybe not rounds one and two, but I think, you know, round one and then maybe round four or five, you could see another defensive tackle.
I think so.
Yeah. So I think that's very
I think that that would make a lot of sense. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Again, thanks for the questions, guys. Gina, you already mentioned where they could find you on the Twitters and which sparked the reaction for the mailbag to begin with.
That was a happy accident. I'm glad that we remembered because they were good questions. And yes, thank you for submitting them. And I'll throw up another post the next time we're ready to podcast.
Yep, absolutely. And guys, as for me, as always, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW. And of course, here on the podcast and on the other political podcast that Gina and I do, which will be hopefully getting out this week as well. So for Dave Choate, the Falcoholic himself, Gina Madeline Thomas, this is Dave Walker, DW, thanking you for listening in again to the Falcoholic podcast, and we will talk with you next time.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.